Welcome to Esoteric Modulation, episode 014, a festive roundup. Esoteric Modulation is your fortnightly podcast that covers all the wild and wonderful world of modular, exciting and unusual instruments, and we take a look at interesting sound and visual art projects too. I'm Ed Ball.
And I'm Ben Wilson.
Hi Ben, how are things?
Good, good. I feel at this point I'm in a good run to the end of the year, work-wise, after a bit of time away, illness and stuff like that. Plenty of videos going up. Lots of work testing some new modules, which is also nice, bit of behind-the-scenes stuff, and of course, plenty on the cards for video. So, usual kind of stuff, but all good. How about you?
I've just received a micro granny. I sort of felt like I needed a bit of 8-bit action because obviously I still haven't got a Coco Qantas in my hands at the moment. But I thought I'd go for the micro granny and just have sort of a mess around with that. I've had a look at some videos on it. It looks a really interesting little thing. I haven't actually got it out of the box yet. It just came the other day. So looking forward to digging into that.
Just to butt in, for those following the saga of Ed and the Coco Qantas, there may be wheels in motion for something special coming in that regard in the new year. There will be an end to us teasing Ed about not having a Coco Qantas.
Yeah, we may have something up our sleeves. So, yes.
It's not necessarily, the end's not in sight just yet, but...
It's coming with a twist, shall we say.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, I've just bought a couple of dictaphones to, you know, get a bit of destruction into some sound. And I've been talking to Scott Campbell again about the OM1. To connect the OM1, he uses a CV control cassette. So just been talking to him to see if I can get a couple of those CV control cassettes so I can do different things with CV control in different mannerisms. So yeah, it's been, you know, an interesting couple of weeks, actually.
Lots of interesting stuff. I think the Bastl Micro Granite, and it's what, they're about £150, just short of $200, yeah. €200, certainly less than. Yeah. It's a great little sampler. I think that and a collection of dictaphones would be an interesting series of kind of non-synthesized sound sources for loops playing and just bits of samples kind of playing around. Be interesting to bring each of those up almost on a channel on a mixer, where each medium of playback has a different tone colour, as well as, of course, the source material. Look forward to seeing what you do with that.
Yeah, well, the idea is to gesturally play the cassette loops with gesturally playing equipment and bring them in and out. So I'm looking forward to getting all that together, and hopefully I'll be able to do that over Christmas and into the new year. So yeah, all good stuff. Let's move on to our guest today. He used to be a DJ at Panorama Bar, Trezor in Berlin, and Subclub. For 20 years, his labour of love has been running his label, Erudite, all focused around local artists from in and around the Glasgow area. He used to run a store that was half DJ vinyl and half music tech called Rubberdub before moving on to Glasgow Signal Sounds, a shop that is focused on our beloved modular equipment. He is also an avid supporter of our scene, and he's personally helped me and many others with measured advice and wisdom through those real head-scratching times of setting up your first case. He's a perfect guest for today, so we can take a look back at gear throughout the year. His name is Jason Brunton of Signal Sounds. Great to have you on at last, Jason.
Hi, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
You sold me my first stackable cables, if I remember right.
Wow.
I remember the Jason at RubberDub email. Indeed. Probably about 6-ish years ago, maybe.
It'd be about...
And you were a pound or two cheaper because there was no shipping. So I was all over that at the time. I was all over that at the time.
Absolutely.
Scrimping and getting into modular.
Well, it's not cheap.
It's great to see that. And Signal Sounds, for a while, just thinking of how Signal Sounds has came to be where it is now, it was running out of another store for a while as well. Once you first moved from RubberDub, wasn't it?
Yeah. So initially, I set it up as almost like a kind of subdivision of a more mainstream retailer called Guitar Guitar. I knew the guys who owned the company from way back in the 90s. They used to run another mainstream store called Sound Control, really big in the 90s and 2000s.
Yeah, I remember that.
So they had some office space and some storage space, and it kind of fitted pretty well with what I was doing. I was just looking for a, you know, relatively small scale operation, and I got set up with about 3.5 years ago, roughly.
You're in your own store now, we should say, which not only, of course, houses Signal Sounds, but an absolute mass collection of vintage synths. Are they all yours? And maybe run down some personal favourites for the listeners.
Yeah, so one of the interesting things for me was to create a space which has a mixture of classic, vintage, analog and digital synths going back to, you know, the 80s, 90s stuff, and then mixing that with the more kind of current modular scene and small kind of boutique desktop synths. Just as an example, there are a lot of younger musicians who perhaps haven't seen some of these classic synths in the flesh, and they can come in, see a Jupiter 6 and a Juno 106 and a Oberheim Matrix, and then we can show them with the modular equipment we have where some of these ideas have been either brought forward into kind of current devices or, you know, ideas that have survived basically and have worked really well. So Moog filter modules or Oberheim oscillator modules. And I found that to be, you know, an interesting idea. So yeah, there's a collection of stuff from Waldorf, Roland, some Yamaha stuff, just a mix of everything that I've kind of accumulated over the nearly 30 years that I've been kind of working in music retail and you know, studio production.
So when I visited, not that long into the shop, and still, you know, you offered me, I think, a dope for Monster Case to sit on his box.
Exactly.
It was still, you know, you're clearly still setting up and getting, you know, bits of work done. This sounds like an amazing place for people to be able to come. And as you say, especially younger producers and musicians to come in, hear the original things that they've probably heard about or lusted over on the internet and scouring eBay and wondering why it's so expensive.
Yeah.
Not that modular's cheap. And then I like this idea you can show them which ideas have survived and are still available in current forms. Yeah. How far off are you from opening? Not to give it a specific date, but is it sort of within the next few months?
Yeah, definitely. We've got some work planned for just before Christmas that will make a specific area in the window area in particular, which is going to be a nice space. There's a lot of natural light comes in. We're going to make it nice and comfortable and people will be able to sit and just patch away, headphones on if they want, or through speakers, and explore and experiment with the modular gear. The rest of the stuff, probably looking at February, March, before we have a fully kind of integrated studio setup and modular setup together. So yeah, next couple of months. It's never going to be a standard music retail store. I think that buying music equipment, if you go into a traditional music store, it's a very artificial environment to do that. And what you have are things like, if you've got a Moog Cirin, which is a small desktop monosynth, and you're not a great player, which I'm not a particularly adept keyboard player. If you've got that sitting in a traditional music store, sitting on, you know, in the little Moog area, and it's just hooked up to like a MIDI keyboard, you don't really get the best out of that synth. It's really hard to make an informed decision. What you really need is a space which has something that's as close to your home studio kind of setup as you can get. So whether that's a computer-based sort of Ableton setup, or whether it's you're using hardware sequencers, you kind of need to have something that approximates what you have at either a home studio or your actual studio, in order to be able to use the gear and understand how it's going to fit into your kind of workflow. So that's kind of what we're working towards doing.
I love the idea that someone could come in, you know, and you've maybe got an interface sat there that you can just pass them the USB cable, and they could just come in with their baseline from their Ableton Clippers MIDI and just try a few synths out and then leave with the right one. You've been incredibly supportive of the scene, of course, supporting our good friend Milo Melody's Why We Bleep podcast. I think you sponsored an early venture, a little online magazine I did for a while, too. Just really tuned in. And moving forward from that, a great supporter of Mutes, a supporter of the new module Oct, which is a collaboration with Instruo that's out now. And Ed told me I had to spill the beans on this one. It should be out by now. If it's not, here's the big reveal. Oct.
reveal that Oct. I've been seeing this in the wings for some time.
Pull the curtains aside, Ben. Pull the curtains aside. Get the spotlight on it.
The great thing about doing a podcast with Ben is that I see what he's up to, and so I get sort of little glimpses of that. So I've seen this in the making, and I think it's absolutely fantastic. So come on, spill those beans.
So I won't bang on for too long, because we do want that. There's a bit of a festive roundup element to this, as the title would suggest. But Oct is out now, or very, very soon. So I'm happy for this to be the reveal if people haven't heard it yet. It's a 4HP 8 output triangle analog LFO. the rates are not synchronous in that they're not synced, they're not different phases of each other, and they're not, you know, halves and doubles of frequencies. They were tuned by ear just to be musically drifting, interesting, just constantly organic modulation in the system. Just to demonstrate this idea of them being freely drifting and organic, I wanted to play a couple of examples on the show. The first of which is an example that is 8 different sine waves, all tuned up to a chord tone. It's a C minor 9 chord for anyone interested, all going into individual VCAs, and the LFOs are what controls the levels on the VCAs. So you can hear each note in this chord tone kind of freely fade in and out. Couple of other little examples, the next one being a bass drone, so any kind of oscillator that offers more than one bit of wave shaping, so not just pulse width modulation, for example, works really well just to keep, say, the slope, the curve, the pulse width, the depths all just changing freely, and not having that cycle in time with a sequence just helps keep your tones changing. It's engaging over time that way. Final example for now, of course there's the video to check out, we'll link that in the show notes, is with Fumana from Fraptools. So it's again 8 bits of free moving, free drifting modulation, all free running into some granular samples and loops, and then using the spectral tilt and the fixed filter banks on the Fumana from Fraptools just to pull in different sounds and harmonics over this loop. And again, that just keeps it going. The idea being it could be an installation that never repeats spectrally and tonally because the modulation doesn't all sync to a certain rate or tempo.
This is something that I'm really personally interested in, Ben. And I think it's just nice to have something, isn't it, that's not locked down to a pulse, a grid. It's free-flowing, it's organic, and especially for what I'm trying to achieve, and I'm guessing lots of other people out there, it's just a lovely little module that bring up something a little bit different in your case.
Well, it's just trying to bring some life to things. You know, there's all sorts of ways to use this. Thinking of a really old, in dire need of a service, vintage analog synth, everything's probably drifting all over the place, but not with the same rate. You know, if the filter's doing something weird in the resonance path and the pitch is drifting, they're probably just randomly freely moving around at their own odd, old, broken synth ways. But being able to patch that in is one thing. It's been interesting with Logic and rhythmic stuff as well. Of course, the examples here are all quite ambient and drifty, very much in keeping with the tone of the show. But yeah, there'll be lots of content for people to check out. And as always, people can ask questions if they're curious.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing that out. And Jason, as I suppose, as well as selling these things, you're a distributor for Ben's modules, aren't you, and other manufacturers. Can you tell me a bit about how that works as a distributor? Because not only are you running a shop and you've opened that lovely studio, you're a distributor as well.
Yeah, so the way that came about was Alex, who is my partner here at Signal Sounds and was at my previous business, Rubberdub. Alex decided that he would like a change in his life, and he decided to come and work with me here at Signal Sounds. As part of that, he wanted to expand on a kind of sideline in the business that he had set up at Rubberdub, which was the distribution of expert sleepers and Instruo modules, which kind of came about because they're both locally based. Expert sleepers are actually based in Edinburgh, and Instruo are based in Glasgow. So it was an organic thing, but he hadn't had a chance to fully develop that side of the business. So when he came to Signal Sounds, that's really his core job, is working on the distribution production side of things. We've expanded that side of the business in terms of we've also taken on Future Sound Systems based in Bristol. Finlay and Jamie's work is absolutely superb. We were big fans of it. And then we've also taken on Steady State Fate from over in New York. Andrew Morelli's work goes way back to the roots of Eurorack. He was one of the early Eurorack guys, round about the same time as Make Noise and Tip Top, and those guys were starting. So we've got a few brands now that we distribute, and the way that works is fairly simple. The other modular stores throughout the world contact us, and we ship a combination of those modules to all over the world. We've got customers in Japan, we've got customers in Australia, LA, pretty much everywhere. And it's interesting because a lot of the people we deal with are in a very similar situation to us. They run a small independent store and they've got a real passion for what they do. So that's one of the more enjoyable parts of the business. Ben's modules in particular, his first module was a collaboration with Bifaco over in Barcelona. And we sell their modules already, so that was a nice natural fit. And then with his new module, that's a collaboration with Instruo. Again, we were already their distributor, so yeah, we'll be handling that module. And I'm really interested in Ben's concept for collaborating with different modular companies for different ideas that he has. I just think that's a really good example of how the modular scene is completely different to the more mainstream music production and music production companies. It's just a different attitude and a different approach. You would not see Focusrite collaborating with another company to make a different audio interface. You wouldn't see Akai collaborating with Roland to make, you know, a product which utilized the best of both their kind of skills. It just doesn't happen. Whereas in the modular world, it's happened with Ben. I can also think of a few other examples. Folktech did a version of the 2600 oscillator with Studio Electronics. And yeah, you know, there's a lot more cross-pollination and collaboration going on here than you would expect from any normal kind of music company. So I love the idea that not only are musicians collaborating, but the people that are making the modules and coming up with the ideas are also collaborating. And that's kind of how we see our role as distributors as well, is a collaboration with the retailers that we deal with and a collaboration with the brands that we distribute. So we try and have as much input and feedback to the brands as possible when they're asking us about what's needed or what's shipping next, or but even like features that, you know, should this module have this feature? Is it necessary? Should it be 12 HP or 10 HP? We get a little bit of input back to the brands that we distribute, and that's a collaborative aspect as well that I really enjoy.
Yeah, when I did come up and came and had a cuppa, as I said, at Signal Sounds, and of course I was with Instruo at the time, it's really nice to just get an understanding for this distribution relationship that I think it allows them to just continue being creative and doing the things they're really good at. They can give you X amount of stock in a big box. I just imagine Jason coming, unloading the car, and then just going back off to be Jason at Instruo again.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's perfect. It just lets him do his thing and keeps them all on track without thinking, right, we have to stop for a week now.
Yeah.
Pack boxes, ship it ourselves.
And that's playing to your strengths. So we already have customers from our mail order, our retail mail order in every country in the world. So we're already experienced and can ship to everywhere and do it very efficiently. There's no reason why Jason at Instruo should have to take time off from his incredibly busy sort of development schedule and, you know, creating amazing new products because he has to pack, you know, 200 modules into various boxes and ship them all over the world. That's what we're good at. So again, it's playing to each other's strengths.
Yeah. And to jump right into the kind of festivities and the roundup element, I was curious, what were the top sellers this year? If you maybe hit us with a few of the top selling modules from Signal Sounds.
The classics are still the classics. So Maths from Make Noise is probably still a long-term seller. But Distings from Expert Sleepers. Distings sells for a multitude of reasons, but essentially it's small, it's affordable, and can pretty much do anything. So I think the record is 5. I know someone who has 5 of them in their system. There's probably other people with more, but you know, it is the sort of module where people come back and buy 2 or 3 on a pretty regular basis because it's small. It can be a sample playback module. It can be a half-wave rectifier. It can be a precision adder, a quantizer, a clock to delay. You know, you pretty much rhyme anything to do with a utility or effects processing, and it can do it. So, yeah, Distings still easily the number one module in terms of overall sales.
As you say, it's absolutely the answer to, I really want to merge two sequences but not have to re-quantize them. Indeed. There's a precision adder mode on the Disting.
Yep.
And if you get something else that does it, there's another 50 things the Disting does. Indeed. But it does them all really well. I know a lot of people use it just for the stereo delay,
yep,
the tape delay. As you say, it could be an oscillator, but it's not, yep, just, it's a bare bones utility oscillator. There's wave shaping on there.
Sure.
There's a whole range of that just answering so many questions,
yeah,
for people.
And that's why people buy more than one, because they buy it, find it had an incredibly useful utility function that they use all the time. But then they think, God, I tried the delay and the delay was really good on it. So you buy a second one. Everyone's concerned with case size and trying to fit as many modules in as possible. And Disting covers that really well. You know, a variety of very useful functions in a small space for not a huge amount of money, which is why it's the number one. Probably the next one would have been Make Noise Mimeophones. So whenever Make Noise bring out a new module, it causes a stir. People are interested in it from day one. You know, they've had some modules recently which are a little bit more utility. So they had a stereo output module. Those don't fly out at the same rate. But when they bring out a new sampling module, an effects module, or an oscillator, you know, people go wild for it. So Mimeophone, the second biggest selling module at Signal Sounds this year. And as part of their new stereo range, it also fitted into a new way of working for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think anytime they work with Tom Erb, yeah, as well, it's almost, yeah, a secondary reason to have a load of hype.
Totally.
But yeah, any kind of fusion of time-based effects as well, reverb, delay, very different color to the others, the Echophone.
Indeed.
And the Herbverb, really different color, but this almost gets granular,
uh-huh,
kind of thing, looping, delay, and as you say, that very nicely fits in this new stereo environment they're building around, say, the Morphogene and their other utilities,
yeah,
the X-Pan and XO. So I'm not surprised to see that.
Yeah, another thing that they do really well is they present their products in videos with personality. So Walker works really hard, and the other guys at Make Noise all work really hard, Eric and so on, to create small, short, sort of very focused videos that show off the product in interesting ways. And I think that helps build a lot of interest in what they do. So they've already got a big name in terms of they're a well-known brand within the modular community. But when they do teaser video, and then they'll do short 1 minute patch videos, or slightly more extended 3 minute videos showing fun and interesting ways of using the module, that's kind of another reason why their stuff sells more than perhaps some others.
Yeah, they've got, like as you say, Walker on YouTube and Peter Spear on Instagram,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, yeah.
They really nourish all that internally and externally.
Yeah.
They're great at getting things out to people,
yeah,
and having it seen, and again, supporting people such as me and getting demos done and,
sure,
things like that.
Definitely.
So that's no surprise, really. Let's pull a couple more out from your top sellers, cool, at Signal Sounds.
Mordax, the Mordax Data is... Yeah, we couldn't get enough of them this year, and it was the third biggest selling module that we had. They released a black panel version, and just for people that don't know exactly what it is, it started off life just as a fairly simple idea, which was a four-channel oscilloscope and spectrogram to give you a visual feedback on what your system is doing. But it's kind of developed into more than that. It can do envelopes, it can even do oscillation now, and it's just... And I think, Ben, probably most of your videos have a Mordax Data in it. And I'm fairly sure, yeah, that that's why people, they see it, every single time they go into one of your videos, they see it as a good way of visualizing what's going on in the system. And partially for that reason, we couldn't get enough of them this year. They're great guys in terms of their development. They've been a little bit slower in getting the stuff out in production, so there were quite big delays on getting them into the stores this year. But yeah, as soon as they came in, they're straight back out again.
It's one of the only modules I have free of, and I can realistically look at any case and go, you know what, I could probably do the data in there.
Yeah.
The only negative, I get fed up of moving it around. Because any demo I do, even though there's three of them, it's the only thing I forcibly try and put in. It's such a great educational tool, but it's also such a great just function and utility, regardless of seeing wave shapes and that helping understand visual learning.
Yeah.
I had a friend say, oh, I'm driving a laser, I think from one of the 1010 modules or maybe the erogenous tones here, and I need a 1 hertz, very specifically a 1 hertz ramp wave. What can I do that on? I'm like, well, data does it. It's got the waveform output mode. It can read out in frequency or pitch. It's super accurate. It's one of, if not the most accurate clock source, I think, in your ORAC. And you can see via all the clock divisions and all this other stuff it does that people don't realize.
Exactly. That's when
it's a total no-brainer.
They've developed it over time to do a lot of really useful functions in a similar way to this thing, but people still see it probably primarily as a visual representation of a waveform, but it can definitely do more than that.
It's really great. But you mentioned that you need to pick one of these up, Ed. How do you see this sort of fitting in your setup?
Yeah, well, first of all, I was surprised to see this in third place because of what it is. And then I thought to myself, why are you surprised? I've been lusting after one of these for quite a while. And it's one of those things that when I started my original case, I wanted one, but I wanted the budget to go into, I suppose, sound sources and all that type of thing. But always thinking, I really, really want one of those. Oh, but yeah, you know, maybe I want an effects module first. I really love it. And the other thing that I liked is they bought the black face out because I like all my modules. I know this sounds petty, but I like...
Yeah, to be aesthetically sort of matching as much as possible.
Yeah, and, you know, I wanted that black face. And when that...
That's the visual artist in you coming out, Ed. That's you. That's it. You just can't get away from it.
Yeah, I have to have everything visually looking right. And when that black face come out, I thought, well, that's a no-brainer. Yeah, I'm definitely going to get one of these. And as well, because they've evolved it over time to have a lot more functionality about it. But the main thing is, it's just to be able to see what is happening within the spectrum of the sound that you're producing from your modular is just so handy to have, isn't it? But yeah, I'm definitely going to get one of these. But I'm just on the website at the moment, and they must have had a good year because they're sold out on the website.
Indeed. Sold out again. Yeah. They're coming back potentially end of January, depending on whether they change the faceplate or the screen or whatever else they change. Ed, what you were saying about at the beginning when you're building a system, you don't want to spend precious resources on things that don't make sounds. This is a common thing that we're coming up against, and that everybody does this at the beginning. They buy lots of oscillators and lots of filters, and then they wonder why their system is kind of sounds like a sort of standard monosynth. Yeah. And the reason is, if you spend a little bit more time on looking at unusual modulation sources and things which cause change over time. So if you can think a little bit more in terms of what's interesting about modular is either sequence generators, randomness, sources of uncertainty, bring all of that together into your system and it really starts to come to life. So a lot of people don't want to spend money on things that don't make sound. I'll buy another oscillator, that'll make my system more interesting. Probably, but you might be better taking that same budget and looking at two different modulation sources and, you know, some kind of random trigger or a switching module. Things that people consider boring are actually the things that make your music more interesting.
Yeah, I think trouble is when you first got your budget and you race out and get your case, you just want sound, don't you? And it's something learned, though, that actually having these unusual type of modules to add to that.
Yeah,
really,
that's actually the strength of modular. It's not apparent when you first put your system together, but that's actually where the strength lies.
No, it really opens things up. So yeah, I'm definitely going to get one very, very soon. And I was surprised, and then I thought, well, why? I've wanted one of these for quite a long time.
Sure. Well, the next one in the list is probably a surprise as well. And it's basically a Doppler passive mult.
Yeah.
That's like the fourth biggest selling module. Again, a utility module. But again, if you want to bring life to your system, sending modulation to multiple sources within your case, the mult allows you to easily sort of route signals and take the same signal and route it to various different sources. Whether that would be, if you've got a clock signal, you would send it to a clock divider. You might also send it then onto, you know, an LFO, which is running at a different speed. It'll allow you to do things which do have a massive effect on your music, but you would think that, you know, it's a pretty boring, simple module. But yeah, that's the sort of fourth biggest selling module in Signal Sounds.
I'm really glad that's in there and people are embracing the passive mult. It's also cheaper, certainly the Dope for One, than a load of stacking cables as well.
Yeah.
In terms of how many splits of your signal you get. And it's a humble little one that I remember explaining to a friend that's not quite in modular yet. He was asking why, when plugging an envelope in, that didn't or seemingly couldn't, with a cable he had in his hand, just route to everything. Because in Massive or Serum or one of these soft synths that he uses, he can just have a macro knob that affects anything he drags it to.
And yeah.
That's this idea of a multiple. And if it's not that crucial exactly what the voltage is, it can be passive, so it's really cheap because it's just sockets on a panel wired together. There's really nothing to it, but they are incredibly useful devices. It's nice to see Dope for on the list as well.
Yeah, I mean, they did kind of start it all, so yeah.
So we asked you for these top selling modules, and just to frame that again, people have heard it, but that were the top selling modules at Signal Sounds. We also asked you to pick out a few kind of interesting bits that personally caught your eyes or ears over the year.
Sure. This first one's a real easy one. Landscape HCTT. It's not a module, but it does connect to your modular system. And it is essentially a cassette-based control system stroke audio source, which you connect to your modular system using either the audio output or the CV and gate outputs that are built into it. So you put a cassette into the device, and then you manually wind the cassette backwards or forwards. Doesn't sound like much in terms of the basic idea. It's incredibly simple, but as with all the best kind of products, it is way more interesting to play with, and the output is way more interesting than you would expect. So you can take anything that you've got recorded on a cassette, and it can be like novelty Christmas tunes. It could be music that you've made and recorded onto cassette, and you put it in, wind the two wheels backwards and forwards. You can create weird slow drones, or you can speed things up and create really weird textural stuff depending on what the source material is. Eric at Landscape had produced an instrument called the Stereo Field, which was also very popular, which is a touch capacitive plate drone instrument, and he took some of the ideas from that, particularly the touch plates, and added them to this HCTT, that which allows you to trigger sequences or events through on your modular system just by touching the top of the panel. When you combine those two things together, so the audio source out or the CV out from the unit and the touch plate, it's really, really powerful. It also looks fantastic. It's like an art project almost, dealing with Landscape. His aesthetics are fantastic. It creates a really unique looking instrument, which also sounds fantastic.
Be perfect for you, Ed, this, I think.
Well, I seen it at Superbooth and I thought it was a no-brainer. I'm definitely getting this. The only thing that's not stopped me from getting it, it's on my chain of things that I want. I don't know whether I've talked about this in the past, but I love the concept of scratching with tape rather than vinyl. And a few years ago at Superbooth, I had to go on the magnetophon and absolutely loved that. So that was a module with, they'd built a one from the module with a cassette head on that, and then you could scrub over cassette to do a scratching variant on cassette. And actually, I'm just about to get one of these built because I really want to record on tape and scrub over them. And I know this does a similar thing, but obviously it's a bit more complex than that, in the way that it brings this lovely CV notion into it as well. And of course, it's played really differently as well. I definitely want one. I'm obviously getting that made now, but further on down the line, I'm getting one of these. One of the things I do love about this is, as you've said, the aesthetics, and it looks beautiful. It looks interesting. It's very tactile to play as well. So yeah, this is a absolute no-brainer for me. I will be getting one February, March next year, I would have thought.
Yeah, I think from a performer's aspect, having sort of non-traditional control instruments for your modular system is definitely a very powerful thing. It definitely sets you apart from someone that's just pressing buttons and knobs. If you've got some way of interacting with your system like that, I think that's a really strong notion.
Yeah, I mean, I've gone from this weird journey of coming from I want total control with electrons and thinking I'm going to pre-program everything. It's all going to be done precisely. And that's the route. And I started down that road and quickly just left that behind. And where I found myself going is more esoteric, more gestural. And my case at the moment is being built towards gestures. So I can play things. I actually want to go very gestural based where it's all hands on. I'm affecting that sound. This comes into that concept very, very nicely.
Cool. Next up, Chaos Devices Odessa, which was their long awaited additive synth oscillator. I mean, it's a big module. It's like 20-something HP. The reason I chose that was it's getting a little bit more difficult to find new ideas in Eurorack. So a lot of stuff has been done, and it's been done 10 times. So you can buy 10 different Moog filters. But the Odessa works as an additive synthesis oscillator. And additive synthesis, in its simplest form, is a way of constructing sound using sine waves, mostly. An example would be like a Hammond organ works with drawbars. Now, those drawbars are basically bringing in and out harmonics at different frequencies, and you build up a sound in that way. With the Odessa, what you're doing is a similar kind of thing, but you're working with banks of really interesting waveforms. Adding them together, it creates a sort of interesting, glassy, evolving textural stuff. So easily, it's absolutely beautiful sounding oscillator. It maybe reminds me of the original Waldorf microwave type of sounds. Yeah, it's just, to me, it sounds really unique and really interesting compared to a lot of other kind of digital oscillators. Absolutely love it, and so do a lot of other people. It's been very, very popular since it finally launched a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm dying to get my hands on this. To me, it's the first proper, real additive synthesis in the format. Of course, there's the harmonic oscillator from Verbos, which, understandably, as it's entirely analog, can't have 512 harmonics.
Exactly.
The Odessa can up into the thousands. That's just 8 harmonics and it's analog. And again, lovely module. But having additive synthesis that, as you say, is sine waves that ultimately all need a VCA to control their level if you're going to spectrally morph. It couldn't really be done to that degree in analog. I don't think you could balance out the circuit, never mind if space and price wasn't an issue. And just a bit of clarity on that, because I had someone ask me about this, and it's maybe something that other people listening aren't too sure about. Things like West Coast techniques, like FM and wave folding, aren't additive synthesis. Of course, they are adding harmonics from simple sources. If you wave fold a sine wave, for example, whereas we'd call shaving off harmonics with a filter, a very East Coast Moog-like technique, subtractive. Additive synthesis is specifically that. It's sine waves with VCAs and using those tuned at harmonics to build up new harmonic structures and waveforms. And the manual as well for Odessa is great. There's some nice visual little graphs and drawings to show you how, here's how a saw wave is constructed out of these harmonic structures. But the fact you can spectrally tilt these and morph between them, and it also does big unison spreads, or it's 5 voices if you get the expander, hell, I'm really looking forward to Odessa.
It also does all of those things in a very simple and easy to control way, unlike previous additive synths back in the 80s and 90s. So I'm thinking of the Kawai K5. An absolute bastard to get your head around, like no getting away from it. It's not an easy form of synthesis if you don't have the correct sort of user interface. Odessa's got amazing sounds and it's very easy to control.
That's the thing, isn't it? To have a knob basically that goes from pure sine wave to It's almost like the filter, adding harmonics, taking them away, spreading them out and fanning them out across the field, splitting them into kind of even and odd partials that you could pan in stereo. It's a very nice interface for working with a potentially very big, dense sound or a very pure, clean, lovely sound as well. I very much anticipated for me getting my hands on one, which I hopefully will soon.
The last one that I wanted to talk about, again, isn't a module. We talked about the collaborative aspect of modular earlier on. You collaborated with Instruo and Bifaco to make some great modules. I was on a Facebook user group, a sort of Eurorack user group recently, and saw a guy had posted up an image of a blanking panel that he'd made. So it basically created a little, you know, unique cartoon design of a kind of robot cat sitting in front of a modular system. And it just jumped out at me. And I thought, that looks amazing. Love it. And then I looked, and it was actually one of our customers who had made it, a guy called Mark Thompson, who lives down in Dumfries in Scotland, bought loads of gear off us and a really nice guy. So I got in touch and said, look, I love your blanking panels. Can you make some? And he was like, yeah, I could get you some. And within 2 weeks, he had two designs, had them all manufactured, sent over from China, arrived here, and we had them up on the website. And again, you wouldn't see that in any other part of the music kind of technology world at all. First of all, the speed at which it happened, and secondly, the kind of collaborative aspect of it. I thought it was really a nice little story to end off on, in that we had a customer who's been buying stuff from us, and now we're buying stuff from him, and people all over the world are buying his blanking panels, and they look great in your system. So yeah, Mark T Modular is his brand name, and yeah, we're really enjoying working with him. He's a great guy.
Yeah, I think it is indicative of the scene, isn't it? And again, I love this cross between, you know, music, art, collaboration. Like you say, you just won't get this anywhere else, will you? It is quite unique to what we're doing. And I love Instruo's.
Yeah, their aesthetics are amazing.
It's a piece of artwork. And Foltec as well. I mean, his stuff is just colossal. And in fact, when I went to Superbooth again this year, I was looking at Instruo's stuff. As an artist, it inspired me to think about actually starting artwork on circuit panels. A really lovely way of doing things, and quite inspiring as well for me as an artist.
Yeah.
So what's really caught your attention this year, Ed? I like this idea you were discussing around the HCTT from Landscape, the human controlled tape transport. I know your work, throwing paint around, and I've joked in an episode a while ago that, you know, I could throw some paint around, but it's not going to come out in the same way. But I love this idea that the way you're thinking with these things, of the format that the thing is played on, be it 8-bit sampling, be it tape, be it digitally controlled new Eurorack stuff, that tonally the medium is very different. And I see your approach, that's very much like your artwork. We've discussed how you'll think about, am I throwing this bit of paint through the layer of paint that hasn't dried, or is it to sit on top of? And just this idea that sound works in this really artistic layering of kind of mediums and intentions. So I was really curious, because I haven't asked you this yet, genuinely, what's really caught your attention this year?
Well, I mean, if we're looking at, say, just pieces of gear that are coming out, obviously Arba and Lumper are two that I'm really looking forward to seeing come out, basically because they do feed into the sort of journey that I'm looking at doing in terms of sort of sound, you know, for my artwork, because me building these soundscapes are all about then for me to take that and paint to. So that's, you know, that's actually my journey. And first of all, before I start this, a big thanks to you first, Ben, because you've been such a great sounding board for me this year. A great part of this show is being able to talk to you. You know, we've chewed things over, we've been devil's advocates on stuff, you know, and you've really clarified in my mind where I want to go with equipment. And as I say, the journey's been very different from where I thought it would be. And it's all about these, you know, very different sounds, layering of sounds, and sort of doing it in a very, very sort of gestural way. And at Superbooth, those two, just like, you know, I was looking at those, they look beautiful, and B, they sound great. But for me, I think over this year, you know, I still love my Continuum. I know it's not an instrument of this year. It's a very, very, if you like, old instrument that's been, you know, developed slowly. But I still get so much inspiration out of that thing because it's gestural. You can push the sound and pull the sound and manipulate that sound with your finger. Your finger's the envelope. It's the modulator. It's just absolutely wonderful. So that's been an inspiration. Our journey into tape, it's been so fun doing that with you, going into the journey of tape. And that's definitely, you know, where I feel very, very comfortable now. And I feel that's where I want to be. Although I haven't got one I feel like I have, which is the Coco Qantas. I've read so much on that thing, seen all the videos. And obviously we've talked about it really in depth, both me and you offline. We've devoted quite a few hours of Coco Qantas time just talking about the conceptual ratifications of having that in my setup. And just things like, you know, looking forward to the Pulsar 23 coming out, seeing that super booth this year, that was great. So I've had a load of inspirational stuff this year. But what has been good for me this year is to know exactly where I want to go, tonality wise, concept wise, and, you know, as I say, this gestural base sort of take concept is where I want to go. So it's been a fabulous year for that. And I mean, we could just keep going on about inspirational instruments that have come out this year. There's so many, isn't there?
Well, great. I think that leads us towards the end of the show. At this stage, a huge thanks to Jason for coming on and joining us.
Thanks for having us.
It's been nice to know what sold well, as well as some personal interests. And I'd like to start giving some shout outs, especially to the Seattle connections. I've already mentioned Tim's Podulu Modcast. We've got Ellison's Waveform magazine. I've just finished the second issue of that. Looking forward to the third, and I need to get back to writing an underrated module segment for the third one. I miss my timing window for that second one for various reasons. Of course, check out Kyle and Robert's Source of Uncertainty, the Buchler podcast. I've been learning loads and finding all sorts of nuggets of information from them too. And our friends at Patchworks, which have really kind of cultivated that Seattle scene. And of course, Modular Seattle, Josh and Bradley, that brought Velocity together and just continue to grow this great little nugget of the kind of worldwide scene that is modular.
Yeah, and we released our show every fortnight, so remember to subscribe on your favourite podcasting platform. If you'd like to listen to our podcast with detailed show notes, please head over to our website, www.esotericmodulation.com. We also have a monthly newsletter that you can sign for over there.
You can also look for us on Instagram and Facebook, where we tend to keep up. Do feel free to ask any questions, and of course, anything that isn't in the show notes that we mention, just ask us somewhere, and we'll point you in the right direction.
Yeah, it may take us little bit of time, but we do get back to you. To all our listeners, we wish you a Merry Christmas and a wonderful New Year. And to you guys, I wish you the same. And thank you, Jason, for coming on the show. It's been fantastic to listen to what's hot and what's not within the modular scene.
Thanks again for having us on. Have a great Christmas and New Year.
Yeah, likewise. Have a good one, everyone, and we'll see you next time. See you in 2020.
See you in 2020. Bye.
Bye.
Hello everyone, this is Ben from the future. I'm on my own, Ed's left me up the podcasting creek without the paddle.
Joking aside, I just wanted to add a little update to this podcast to say we're going to take a week off for Christmas and the end of the year, both incredibly busy and also need to spend some time with our families and not just talking about gear all the time. We hope you have a really lovely break and a great end to the year, and we'll be back on the 9th of January, just a week later than expected, just pushing on into the new year, and we'll have some updates to come and of course more esoteric instruments, sounds and techniques for electronic music.